Hello and welcome to the second edition of the Crime Time FM review show. My name's Paul Burke and I write about crime fiction. Due to the popularity of the first show, this is going to become a regular feature, and maybe we'll have a guest reviewer or two at some point along the way. I'll be drawing on my reviews for some of the publications I write for, but also adding a few that are just exclusive to this. And there'll be no gimmicky sound effects this time, so why don't we just get on with it? No better place to start than with the final Montalbano mystery, Ricardinho by Andrea Camilleri. This is a novel with a story behind the story. Camilleri only began writing Montalbano mysteries as he approached his 60th birthday. As the popularity grew, he began to realize the detective would be a large part of his legacy. Camilleri is also a very important cultural figure in his native Italy. So way back in 2004, he wrote the final installment of Montalbano's story. It was locked away in a notary safe, and only saw the light of day in 2017 for some revisions. Fortunately, Camilleri lived to be 93, and he died in 2019, so there were several Montalbano books in the meantime. But now we finally get to the last one, Ricardinho. It all begins with a 5 a.m. phone call when Ricardinho rings Montalbano to tell him everybody's waiting for him at the bar. Montalbano has absolutely no idea who Ricardinho is, but in order to end the phone call quickly, he just says, "I'll be there in 15 minutes and hangs up. But just over an hour later, there's another phone call. This time it's Officer Cattarella, and there's been a murder. Somebody's been shot in the street. The man's name? Ricardinho. Despite his sleep being disturbed again, Montalbano is intrigued now and heads off to the crime scene to interrogate and generally play with witnesses. He's soon taken off the case in disgrace, something that's not unusual for Montalbano. But this time the Bishop of Montelusa won't have that, and so Montalbano is back in charge. An intriguing and entertaining adventure follows. Many familiar characters return in this story, but a few are suspicious by their absence. You will notice that. There are echoes of Montalbano's beginnings in his ending. I don't want to say more and give too much away. Honestly, to say very much about this plot would involve some massive plot spoilers. I'll just say it's a very funny book, giving free range to Camilleri's wry sense of humour and his love of the absurd. It's a beautifully crafted book and a fitting end to the series. Farewell, Montalbano. Next up, The Man on Hackpen Hill by J.S. Munro. I don't think it was much of a leap for John Stock from writing spy thrillers to his psychological novels now coming out under the name J.S. Munro. In essence, they're both about character and the motives that drive them. In this case, Bella, a young journalist, is drawn to a pub in the country where she meets a young scientist from the secret research facility at Porton Down. Jim thinks he's being followed. Meanwhile, D.S. Silas Hart is investigating a murder, a body found inside a complexly drawn crop circle. Jim thinks the crop circles relate to Porton Down's murky past. Bella thinks she has a scoop. But this is only a fraction of what is going on in the novel, as the lines between reality and imagination are blurred. The novel is as much about the mind as it is about the action, and it plays on our fears, paranoia, and fragility. This psychological thriller is totally intriguing, cleverly plotted, and although it's challenging, it's a very enjoyable read. Out now in hardback from Head of Zeus. I want to tell you very quickly about two books that I haven't yet reviewed, but I have formed some thoughts on. One is Lemon by Kwon Yo Sun, and the other is Antarctica of Love by Sarah Strindberg. Both are literary crime novels. Not literary novels in the guise of crime. They're social novels, they're crime novels. In both, the murderer is not at all the focus of the book. The victim, the family and the friends, the survivors of the traumatic crime, they're the focus. This is about the psychological effects of crime on people and the way it's seen by and alters society. This is a really important trend in crime fiction to focus on the victim this way. Both of these books are beautifully written, devastating in their impact, and totally unforgettable. Lemon is published in the US by Other Press and in the UK by Head of Zeus. The Antarctica of Love is published by Maclose Quirker, both available now. Next up is Bad Apples by Will Dean, the fourth Tuva Moodysson mystery. Will Dean, who someone once described as looking like a cleaned-up version of Jon Snow, well, actually, that might have been me, lives in a deep, dark forest in Sweden. He carries an axe, and he gives free rein to his dark imagination in the Tuva Moodysson thrillers. This time Tuva has a new job in a new town, Visburg. This is Halloween season, and rumours abound about ancient rites and an alternative celebration called Pan Night. Get you thinking about Wicker Man and Deliverance. On her way to the new job as deputy editor of the local paper, Tuva finds a distressed woman and a headless body. Tuva has worked in London and Malmo, but this is where she wants to make her home. But as she investigates, the people of Visburg clam up. She knows there's a scoop here, but the local reticence to talk means that Tuva knows a killer is being protected. The bad apples are a metaphor for the decay in the community. The pungent smell of rotting apples left to lie during the Halloween season is one of those features that adds to the atmosphere of the book. This is elk season, but as Tuva makes progress, she's also being hunted. This is a page-turning thriller. The atmosphere is rich and heavy with tension, and a sense of danger is palpable. This is definitely a top recommend. Bad Apples is published by Point Blank in hardback and is available now. To America now for a hard-boiled kind of noirish thriller. Welcome to Cooper by Tariq Ashkenani. This debut for the Edinburgh Solicitor is set in Cooper, Nebraska, and it feels genuinely authentic. The plot instantly draws you in, and the dialogue and character are very strong. Detective Tommy Levine is new in town. This is his last chance. The former DC detective has a past he wants to forget, but he's deluded if he thinks the locals don't know about his links to drug trafficking and what happened with internal affairs that enabled him to keep his job. Tommy isn't long in town when the body of a young woman turns up. It's not long before the police have a suspect, a local paedophile, in mind. He's already served time for rape and murder. Tommy and his new partner Jim go after Kevin Foster. But when they get to Foster's house, Jim shoots him in cold blood. He's already attacked Tommy, and it's Tommy's gun he uses to kill the man. Tommy's past is now a millstone around his neck. He can hardly report Jim. Who's going to believe him? It soon occurs to Tommy that Foster may not be the real killer. That guy might still be out there. Plus, he's got to find a way of getting out from under Jim's thumb. Can Tommy find a way out? Can Tommy find redemption? This is a gripping read. A fantastic debut. You won't be able to put it down. And to be honest, it leaves me already wanting to have more from this author. Out now from Thomas and Mercer. Also from Thomas and Mercer is I Know You by Claire McGowan. Irish author Claire McGowan has written a novel with such a gripping premise that you'll be hooked from the first page. When Rachel is out walking with her dog in the local wood, she stumbles across a dead body. So what do you do when you find a dead body in the woods? You call the police, obviously. But not Rachel. Rachel runs away. And that's where a problem starts, because the police find the body, and the neighbours are only too keen to tell them that Rachel always walks her dog in the woods. So why does Rachel act so strangely? Why does she lie? Rachel's real name is Casey, and 20 years ago, Casey was charged with murder in Los Angeles. She narrowly avoided prison, but she doesn't think anyone will believe her now. Of course, her world soon crumbles as the victim turns out to be her boyfriend's ex-wife. Ex by virtue of her demise, rather than divorce, which hasn't come through yet. One of the great things about this novel is that Casey's story of 20 years ago and Rachel's of now are equally gripping. You'll want to know what's going on in both stories in every incremental chapter. When people act in wholly unexpected ways, you really have to believe in what you're reading, and with Claire McGowan, you certainly can. I read a lot of psychological thrillers, books that are often referred to as domestic noir, but this is very good, atmospheric and brilliantly entertaining. This is my first Claire McGowan, but it certainly won't be the last. Also out by Thomas and Mercer now, Blackout by Simon Scarrow. This is Berlin, 1939. An honest cop, Kripo Inspector Schenker, has avoided joining the ranks of the SS or the Nazi Party so far, but the pressure is growing. He keeps his head down and he gets on with the job of catching criminals. But things have changed. Subordinates are protected by the party, and politics are harder to avoid by the day. He'd join the army if it weren't for an old injury. Ex-film star Gerda has a row with her married lover Dorna at a swanky party. It's witnessed by other actors, sports stars, and even high-ranking party officials. When she leaves, Dorna follows her, and they row again. She heads off to the station on her own. Afraid of the darkness, she's very glad to make it to the waiting room and eventually catch her train. But then someone she recognizes joins her in the carriage. When Gerda turns up dead on the tracks the next morning, an apparent sexual assault, but not robbery, Schenker is called in by the Gestapo to investigate, primarily because he's expendable. Oberführer Müller, of the Reich Main Security Office, Gestapo Müller as he's known, wants Schenker to find the killer. The case is sensitive, given the people involved. The whole thing mixes Schenker up in the rivalry between Admiral Canaris, because he's the uncle of his girlfriend Karin, and Himmler's deputy, Heydrich. The mystery plays on the cop between a rock and a hard place, superbly. Does Schenker have the guile to survive and the nous to catch a dangerous killer, but still please his masters? This is an easy read, evenly paced, and with a couple of interesting twists. Future Schenker investigations promise much. Scarrow sets the scene brilliantly, and this is highly entertaining. If you're interested, I also did interview Simon Scarrow for Crime Time FM, and that's available now too. The book is out in paperback by Headline. Next up, The Bones of Wolf by James Carlos Blake. Writing this good speaks for itself, and James Carlos Blake is a born storyteller. I interviewed Blake recently. It took me a while to track him down in a mountain shack writer's hideaway, but we got there in the end. It turns out much of the inspiration for the Wolf series comes from his own family history, which straddles the border, the Tex-Mex border. The Wolf series is a chronicle of a century of borderland life, the good and the bad, although The Bones of Wolf is a very contemporary setting, but it still reaches into the past. The latest Wolf novel tells the story of Rudy and Frank, and opens with an arms shipment and a hijack. When a crew running a consignment of guns from US into Mexico is ambushed, the men are killed and the Wolf family has to react quickly. The customer is still expecting their cargo, and there's a traitor to deal with. The two sides of the family, north and south of the border, start piecing together what happened. Frank and Rudy recover a haul of high-quality pornography from a raid. Someone spots a canny resemblance between one of the women in the video and an old family photo. When the family matriarch, Aunt Clara, 115 years old, recognizes the girl in the still from the video, a spit for her own sister kidnapped many decades before, she tasks Frank and Rudy with tracking the girl down. The problem is, the girl is a favorite of the boss of the Sinaloa cartel. To rescue the girl, they have to get her out without alerting the cartel and bringing the wrath of the drugs gangs down on them. This is a thoroughly entertaining novel. The language is exquisite, as the calm in the surface masks the trouble brewing underneath. This is not the best of the Wolf novels. The story is a little thin, but it still streets up on most crime novels, and in particular, most borderland noir. I love Don Winslow, but Blake is also the real deal and deserves a wider audience for his incredible exploration of crime and a Mexicana issues. Out now from No Exit Press. The Good Death by S.D. Sykes takes us back to the 14th century and the Black Death. There's no doubt that the current COVID outbreak gave impetus to the backdrop of this book. However, the clever thing about it is, although it's not about the plague per se, which killed half the population of Europe at that time, the devastation plays into the story in a unique and significant way. This is a really intriguing facet of the novel. I can't really say more than that without spoilers. Kent, June 1349. Brother Oswald has been sent out to find sundew, a plant which secretes a sticky goo which entraps flies for food, but also helps with treating wounds and can be used as a sedative. The oldest brother at Kintham Abbey has an abscess. Wandering through the woods, Oswald sees young Agnes Wheeler, a girl from the local village who's been to the abbey many times, but his presence seems to spook her, and when he approaches, she runs away. Foolishly, Oswald chases the girl, and in a panic, she winds up in the river. Unable to reach shore, she's washed away. Eventually, Oswald finds and pulls the body of the girl from the water. That's when he sees the obvious signs of assault on her bloody clothes. At the village, he tries to explain what happened. The local constable, John Roach, is hostile, but it seems Agnes is not the only girl from this village to go missing. The women round on the lazy constable, demanding a search for the attacker. Oswald is struck by the formidable Maud Woodstock and the authority she exercises over the constable. With the plague approaching and the village in quarantine, Oswald and Maud investigate Agnes's death and the other missing young women. This is an intriguing mystery, reminiscent of the Cadfael stories in some ways, but the sensibilities are far more modern. The plight of women at the time is an issue, always tied to a man, either a father or a husband, and not having much in the way of free will. This is easy to get into, and it captures the time and place perfectly. well written and very engaging. Published by Hodder and Stoughton and again out now. Dust Off the Bones by Paul Howarth. I missed Howarth's acclaimed debut novel, Only Killers and Thieves, and now I'm regretting that in the light of this powerful and gripping historical drama. Dust Off the Bones is an engaging thriller, but it's also a devastating indictment of murderous colonialism. The novel opens with the state-sanctioned massacre of the Kurong people, more than 100 men, women and children slaughtered under the pretext of seeking the murderers of three white settlers, supposed innocents murdered by savages. This is Queensland, 1885. This act of genocide stands for many such real and horrifying incidents in Australian history. The Reverend Francis Bean and Indigenous disciple Matthew come across the aftermath of the attack. The bodies are piled high in a crater and are still burning. Sickened by the scene, the two men ride for 4 days to the nearest white settlement, Bewley. The day before it happened, they saw the men responsible for the raid, a native police patrol led by Inspector Noon. At the courthouse, Matthew is thrown out. But as Bean explains what he saw, the local police magistrate McIntyre clearly doesn't care. He tells Bean he can make a statement, but warns him that if he gives testimony against Noon, Noon will hunt him down and kill him. Bean flees in shame and fear, and for a while the matter rests there. 5 years later, we meet Billy and Tommy McBride. Now young men, they are the children who were orphaned by the attack on their homestead 5 years earlier. The brothers haven't seen each other since. They were part of the hunt for the killers and the massacre that followed. Tommy kills the sadistic farmer he's working for. Inspector Noon is the man sent to find him. Noon starts with Billy. He tells him he'll leave Tommy alone as long as he helps him keep the massacre secret. There's a threat to that. But as the story of the massacre breaks, Billy has to find Tommy, as the truth of what happened and both their lives are in danger. This is beautifully understated writing that allows a human tragedy to speak for itself. This is also a sweeping epic that explores the cruelty, intolerance and pitilessness of colonial Australia. Howarth creates strong, believable characters and makes the best of the barren landscape and harsh climate. This is an original, thought-provoking and poignant story. It might make you weep. It will certainly stay with you. This is the kind of fiction that makes crime writing relevant and gives it a good name. Out now from One, Pushkin Press. Well, that's about it for now. 11 very different novels. I hope there's something you find there that you like. Thank you very much for listening. I'll be back with another selection at the beginning of November. But for now, bye.